Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast with Andy Burcham.
Rob Selby came to Auburn from Berry High School in Birmingham as a defensive lineman, an aggressive defensive lineman. By the time his redshirt freshman season rolled around, he was working into the rotation with the likes of Tracy Rocker and Benji Rowland. And that's when his career took a turn. Because of a thin offensive line, Selby made the move to offensive tackle. Selby was part of three SEC championships at Auburn. He played in the 1989 Iron Bowl, the first ever at Jordan-Hare Stadium. After a seven-year career in the NFL with Philadelphia and Arizona, he moved back to Auburn to raise his family and begin his second career. Rob Selby is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast. Welcome into the Talking Tigers podcast. We're going offensive line on the Talking Tigers podcast today. Former Auburn great Rob Selby joins today. Of course, part of a terrific Auburn football team and then spent 7 years in the NFL with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Arizona Cardinals. Rob, good to have you with us today. War Eagle.
War Eagle, Andy. Thanks for having me.
You are in a big group of folks that have been on this podcast before that came to Auburn as a student athlete. Many went somewhere else, obviously, either in their career. Your career, of course, was the NFL for 7 years, but came back to Auburn. And this is where you've raised your family. This is where you work. Just talk about that decision that after your time in the NFL, that you eventually came back to the Plains to raise a family.
I was drafted by the Eagles in 1990. And then we moved to Philadelphia. Me and my wife got married right when I finished Auburn. And so we went to Philly and it was a, you know, awesome experience, of course, but it's not a place I wanted to live full time. So we ended up buying a house back in Auburn, like in 92, I believe. And I've been here off and on ever since. And originally I did it so I'd have a place to train in the off season, be in a place a little bit more familiar where I had friends. And then we ended up staying here once we started having kids, and it's awesome place to raise a family and there's plenty to do. And I mean, every weekend you got a baseball game, a basketball game, something's happening. It's a lot of fun. I grew up in Hoover, Alabama. So I was in Birmingham and I grew up an Auburn fan, an avid Auburn fan during some, you know, some fairly lean, at least on the football side years, you know. So it was I was hardened being brought up in the Birmingham environment with, you know, the shadow of Bear Bryant and all the success they were having at the time. I guess I grew up with some thick skin.
Did you come from an Auburn family, Rob?
I did. Both my mother and father attended Auburn, and aunts and uncles, and I think everybody attended Auburn.
You were part of Berry High School. I'm guessing near the end of Berry High School, right?
I was actually in Philadelphia, maybe in 92 or 93, when I got a phone call from a local reporter friend, and the great Bob Finley had passed away. And, you know, we talked about that a little bit unexpectedly. And that was the summer before they were moving from the Berry campus to the Hoover campus. So I think that was 93, probably.
Talk about those teams that you played on there at Berry High School, Rob.
We had a great group over the mountain, you know, playing against the Vestavias, the Mountain Brooks. We had a bunch of Auburn guys, too. Kirk Crane, he was a senior when I was a freshman at Berry. And then when I was a senior, we had Stan White, mm-hmm. was a freshman. So there was always, seemed like there was a legacy. There was, you know, an Auburn player or an Auburn athlete that was going through there at the time. But it was great growing up in Birmingham. It was competitive, and we had some, you know, some good years, some better years, and great place to play football. I guess the unusual thing is, and I guess it's probably even unusual by today's standards, we never went more than about 5-10 minutes away on a bus to play an away game. Away games, when I got to Auburn, I guess I really didn't even know what an away game was.
Rob, were you always a lineman? I mean, all the way back to Pee Wee football, was it always on the line for you?
I was really a, you know, middle linebacker, tight end, defensive end type. And then at Berry, I was more of a defensive lineman. And that's what Coach Hall and Larry Blakeney recruited me to Auburn, as a defensive lineman. And I really my first year as a defensive lineman, but I was redshirted, but I'd sort of played my way into the rotation, you know, with Tracy Rocker, Ron Stallworth, Benji Rowland, Nate Hill. And then I guess we were a little thin on the offensive line. So they asked me to move over there just a couple weeks before the first game of my redshirt freshman year. And I guess the rest is history after that.
What was that conversation like for a guy that whose heart was set on being a defensive lineman, and now they're asking to make that move over to the O-line at that point?
It was hard because I was a really aggressive guy, and probably my personality was more suited to, you know, the typical defensive line attack, attack, attack kind of, you know, that's what I'd always done. Coach Sullivan, right after us, you know, I was going to do whatever was best for the team. I really want to get on the field. I really wasn't that upset about moving over. I mean, defense, what I felt more comfortable with. But I remember Coach Sullivan, we went out to a scrimmage. He said, you know, if you want to keep playing, you know, I know you love defense, but if you want to keep playing in the future, you know, offensive line is probably going to be a better place for you. I never thought about continuing to play. I was just trying to get on the field at Auburn. So, and that's, I'd never even thought about it till he said something, but that was, you know, I was young. I was a redshirt freshman then.
What did a guy like a Pat Sullivan, another guy from Birmingham like yourself, another Auburn guy from Birmingham, what did it mean for him to be on that staff, that coaching staff, for someone like yourself that had grown up in the shadow of Pat Sullivan there in Birmingham?
I can remember growing up when I think my uncle ran into Coach Sullivan, and he knew I was a big fan and how much he meant to me, you know, as an Auburn kid. I got a signed picture of him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, this is the greatest thing ever. And then you don't ever connect it. But then later on, you know, you see the guy every day, you have a relationship with him, and he was great to be around. He was as good a coach and a mentor as you'd want. You know, I'd want that for my kids. That's the way I look at coaches now, is what I want now when I talk to coaches and I see these college coaches. It's who would I want to coach my kid? And Coach Sullivan was certainly one of those guys. And it was just, man, I just feel blessed that I got to know him a little bit and play for him. And I'd go see him at Sanford occasionally, and he was actually really good to my son. And my son, he had to do a report on a famous Alabamian, and he drew Coach Sullivan like when he was like 10 years old. And I said, well, let's go up there and do some research. So we went and saw him at Sanford and talked to him a little bit. And I mean, it was awesome. We heard some of the best stories, and I was kicking myself for not, I didn't want to record him, but writing some of the things down, he had some unbelievable stories. And then my son, I said, well, Seth, how'd you do on your paper? He said, Dad, I got a B. I said, how do you get a B? I mean, you had great sources. This is impossible. He goes, yeah, the teacher said I didn't cite my sources. Did you just tell her you talked? It came from the man himself. It didn't come from a book somewhere, but I don't know. I thought that was funny.
Talk about the teams, Rob, that you played on. I mean, you're part of I think those teams in the 80s, it's a golden era, not only for Auburn football, but Auburn athletics with Frank Thomas and Charles Barkley and all those guys and yourself on campus. I mean, do you think about, do you kind of allow yourself to think back to those times at Auburn and the athletes, including yourself, that were here playing for the Tigers at that point?
It was a crazy time. I was speaking with Greg Olson the other day. I mean, you had,
there's another,
a Greg Olson. You had a Frank Thomas. So Frank Thomas was in my class, and the freshman reported 5 days earlier than everybody else. And so we're going on campus, and man, everybody's just telling all kinds of stories. They're running a 4.240. They can bench press 500 pounds 50 times. I mean, we were hearing crazy stuff. And my roommate was from Paris, Tennessee, John Hudson. And we would talk about it back in the room, going, man, that guy, he's, you believe all this stuff they're spouting off? And we're laughing. And then one day, this big dude walks in our room. He goes, hey, I'm from Columbus, Georgia, tight end. He goes, you know, if I would have had a better day when the baseball scouts were here, I'd be playing Major League Baseball. And he talked for a little bit, and he left the room. We go, God, we've heard it all now. I mean, there's not a guy more full of himself than that one. Well, you know, little did we know that, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, you know, he was the only one telling the truth.
All right. Your days as a true freshman at Auburn, it's drastically different than it is now. I mean, because guys now, some report in January, for goodness, most of them report in January, or they're here at least in June. You were among those guys where mom and dad brought you down, dropped you off at Sewell Hall. And, you know, I mean, it was in August. It was a day maybe before you had your very first practice. And a lot of times they were freshman only practices at that time. So if you would just talk about how that aspect of football life has changed from when you played at Auburn to what it is now.
And I think probably the model now, because they are coming in the, I guess, in the winter semester, they're getting some time in the weight room. They're getting time to know each other. They're training. They're getting to know their coaches. They're going to class, figuring out where everything is. We were thrown on campus. It was hot as blazes. I mean, there was no 20-hour rule. There was no limit on contact. And we hit, and you were, you know, and you'd wonder what you were doing there. You know, what have you gotten yourself into? And these guys, at each level, when I went from high school to college, I can remember going, oh, my gosh, everything's happening so fast. These guys are so quick, and they react so fast. I'm never going to catch up. And then 18 months later, you know, somehow now you're that guy, and you're like, they're just not as fast as when I first got here. And the same thing happens when you go to the NFL. You're like, oh, man, these guys are reading my hand. They're reading my knuckles, whether I got weight on my hand, whether I don't. Even if I got gloves on, they were reading the seams on my gloves. You know, at each stage, you're like, I'm never going to catch up to this. But, you know, eventually you do. It was tough coming in, you know, and I thought we were physical in high school. It was nothing like we went through with Coach Dye. You know, obviously we're very physical teams, and we won a bunch of games because we out hit people and out hustled people. And that was Coach Dye. I'm pretty sure that was him as a player, and he was instilling that in all of us.
The influence of Pat Dye on you as a man and you as a football player at Auburn.
I really don't even know where to begin, but I came to Auburn, you know, and you're not sure what you want to do, and you're not sure what you're capable of. What we went through, I mean, and it wasn't just fall practices. It was the winter workouts. It was the spring practices. It was the summer training. I thought I had a good work ethic, but he took it to another level. And you just knew how to work every day. You didn't complain. You couldn't complain. You showed up and you did it and you got better. But you also saw the results of it. You saw how much stronger you got and how much faster. And I can remember leaving fall practice as a freshman going, man, it's going to be a while before I can play at this level. But getting in the off-season workout program and gaining 15 pounds of muscle, going out in spring, all of a sudden you're hitting guys that, you know, older guys back in the fall that were kind of wearing you out, to be honest. Now you're hitting them, and you can see in their eyes they got that worry. And you're like, man, this is, you know, you're getting something out of it. It was, you know, it was very rewarding. But my thing is now with this transfer portal, how many times might I have transferred? Because, you know, my first year and a half, 2 years, it didn't look like I was going to get much playing time. I mean, they had a lot of encouragement. I got incrementally better, but I never thought I was going to, you know, see a lot of field time. So I hate the transfer portal and what it's doing to the kids in the game. It's just giving everybody an escape and, you know, keeps them from growing, I think.
What was there a moment, a day, maybe a week or whatever, where you felt to yourself, you know what, I think I'm going to make it now. I think I'm going to, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak.
They moved me to offense, and I was terrible because I was too aggressive, and you can't be aggressive in pass blocking. And I think pretty much everybody we had on the squad would run past me in pass protection. They would try to get me a series of game as a redshirt freshman, but I didn't really feel very, very good about where I was. But that next spring, something clicked, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, I guess I learned to be passively aggressive as you know, as a pass blocker, because you can drill somebody, but you got to sit on your heels. You know, you can't lunge at people. And it took me a while to figure that out. But in the spring, we had a scrimmage in Jordan-Hare. All of a sudden, I wasn't fighting for my life. I felt like I had, you know, a good skill set, and I felt comfortable and relaxed for once. It was the spring of my sophomore year.
Do you think, though, that aggressive nature, you were able to use that to your advantage, even as an offensive lineman?
Oh yeah, you can. It's just, we ran so much downhill with those big backs we had, the James Joseph and the Stacy Danleys and the Reggie Wares. We ran so many power O's where we pulled an Ed King, and we would double as a tackle. We would Ooh. Double with a big Walter Reeves or Lee Mark Sellers. We'd come down and we'd crush somebody, and then just whoever we're blocking, if we did it right, they just turned kind of like a tumbleweed, and we'd just roll them into the linebacker. Boy, I love those big tight ends we had. And then, of course, our running backs were basically, you know, Coach Casey always said, be your own blocker. Well, they were their own blocker, because when they were 225, 230 pounds, they were a load. So when they hit somebody, you know, they would fall for another 3 or 4 yards.
Rob, were you a talker on the field?
If I didn't feel like I was playing well, or if, you know, I felt like I was a little lethargic, I would start talking a little bit I'd start a fight. You know, when your adrenaline's pumping, you play better. You do everything better when your adrenaline's pumping, except for maybe hit a golf ball. I don't know. I would try to get in an argument or get in some kind of fight just to, you know, get the blood pumping and get that adrenaline flowing. You know, when you're in a street fight, you know, you perform better athletically.
Yeah.
And so it helped me.
All right. Talk about that offensive line that you played on at Auburn. You mentioned Ed King, you mentioned John Hudson. And I mean, that's two guys right there. But if you would just talk about those guys you played with at Auburn.
You know, over that 2 or 3 year time, I think most everybody went to the NFL. We had Eric Floyd. When I first got here, it was Eric Floyd, Stacy Searles, Ben Tamborello, Rodney Garner. Rodney Garner was, you know, he just didn't have the height that you need, but he was probably had some of the best hands and the best arms, and would wrestle, for lack of a better word, would wrestle anybody better than anybody else. And then, you know, then we had the Bob Meeks. I mean, every one of these names ended up playing somewhere. Dang, Chris Gray, tight end, ended up moving to tackle. I mean, he played like 14 years, ended up with Seattle. Jim Thompson was one of the better athletes, and he had some shoulder problems, didn't get to go on. But it was a bunch of guys that could run. Every one of us could run. You know, I remember you'd watch Alabama offensive lines then. They always had the big, big gut, you know, and kind of waddled on up there. We had every one of us across the front. I'm assuming they did this on purpose, but we weren't always the biggest. When we played the Ohio States and we played the, you know, the Big Ten teams, they would, you know, they would mash us a little bit for about a series and a half, and then it was over. Because, you know, then we're running through them or running, you know. But it was every time, every game was like that. At first, you know, you're kind of wrestling because you were giving up 25, 30 pounds per man. But after in those bowl games, they were, you know, after about the third series, they were done. You could tell you kind of that size advantage had disappeared.
Is there a game in your Auburn career that still gnaws at you a little bit? It's one that got away from the Tigers.
The obvious answer was my senior year. We were playing Alabama, and we dropped the ball on the ground on two reverses that would have been touchdowns. And we ended up losing that game just for, you know, we had a young Fred Baxter in there that was a great ball player, and a Herbert Casey that, you know, probably hadn't worked as much on that handoff as we could have gone into the game. And so we fumbled two reverses, ended up losing that game. And that bothers me because that's the only time I lost to him. Mm-hmm. But I think the one that cost us the most was probably that as a sophomore, the LSU game in Baton Rouge, you know, the so-called earthquake game. I think that one's probably the, you know, we would have been playing for the national championship if everything past that had gone to plan. But that's the one that probably took away, you know, a little bit of hardware on the shelf, I guess.
Yeah. 89 Iron Bowl. I love to ask guys like yourself that were part of it just about that experience for you, though. I mean, you're right in the midst of your career. What are your memories of the time leading up to and that 89 game against Alabama at Jordan-Hare Stadium?
We had spent so much time talking about this game. For 2 years, Coach Dye, you know, would say, hey, guys, we need to talk about something. You know, this is what we're working on. We're going to get him down here. I want y'all to be in the loop. He would tell us the political side of it. He would tell us all the steps he was going through to get the game here. When it was finally announced and it was decided, you know, it was that obviously for me, and, you know, and as a team, you know, as something we pointed to, I was like, that was going to be my career right there, just because where I grew up in Birmingham and Auburn and how far Auburn had come in that, you know, 10 or 15 years with Coach Dye and what he had, the success we'd been able to have. And we weren't going to, you know, once we got him here in Jordan-Hare, we weren't going to let them get out of here with a W. There was no way. You know, the Tiger Walk to me had always been kind of neat, you know, kind of, you know, something we did for the game. You'd see your family. It was, you know, kind of a little cozy kind of deal before the game. But all of a sudden, before the Iron Bowl, it turned into something else. And we didn't stay on campus. That's the only time I ever didn't stay on campus night for a game. They bussed us to Columbus just to get out of all the noise and all the activity, and probably for the best. But when we get off the bus, I think we checked on our room, probably got changed. We always wore a suit, you know, a coat and tie for the deal. But it was always me, Frank McIntosh, and John Hudson and Mark Rose. We'd walk, I think, just because we wanted to get the stadium. That whole season, we had led the Tiger Walk just to get over there. And we'd walk four abreast and have plenty of room, you know, getting to the stadium. Well, all of a sudden, there wasn't plenty of room. There were people as far as you could see, and it was single file. And it took us, I don't know, that's a casual stroll, probably 10 minutes turned into, you know, 20, 25 minutes to get to the stadium. And the emotion, you know, from the family and the everybody, we caught it. If I don't know if you can catch emotion. And we were fired up, but we had a great week. I thought we had a really good job. We concentrated. We, you know, there's a lot of distractions, but I thought we had a really good 2 weeks of practices then. But I think, and the coaches were really, really cognizant of, hey, let's don't leave the game on the practice field. You know, there's a lot going on. They really tried to keep us steady and sort of tempered throughout the week. Well, now we're not tempered. You know, there's all these stories about James Joseph was hyperventilating. I don't think I didn't hyperventilate, but my feet didn't touch the ground. I mean, it was the most amazing experience. And then it was single file. And I saw grown men and women crying, and it was awesome. And then to get to the stadium, and everybody was in the stadium. I don't know what happened to all those folks outside, because you get to the stadium, you get dressed, everybody's in the stadium. There's not an empty seat. Everybody's standing up. You know, and the blue haze, you know, that was, you should have seen it from the field. I mean, it was the shakers, the orange and blue shakers. I guess they're made out of paper then, and it was
right.
And it was and they were all coming apart, I guess, during the pregame. But it was amazing. It was something I'll never forget. And then it was and I actually had two ankle sprains going into it. And the first week of the practice, I couldn't even practice, but I was able to practice that second week. And it was, yeah, there was nothing going to keep me off that field. I mean,
sure.
And you hear people say, well, I can run through a wall. And you think, well, that's just a, you know, they're not truly going to walk, run through a wall. We were truly going to a man. We were truly going to run through a wall to beat Alabama on that day. And they had a decent football team. We looked at it leading up to it, and I go, well, you know, they had a fairly light schedule is what we thought. So we weren't, you know, we weren't exactly sure what we're getting, but we didn't think they were the second ranked team in the country, but it was a great event. Something I'll never forget.
What does it mean to you to have been a part of that, to be one of the guys, one of the Auburn players that were a part of such a historic day on the Plains?
Well, number one, I'm fortunate because there were several times I wasn't sure I was going to be a part of it. Like I after the second ankle sprain, and I couldn't practice. I couldn't do anything. What was I, 20 years old? I was like, man, I've been waiting for this moment since I could remember. And now I might miss it, you know, because of the two ankle sprains. But, you know, it's something we always talk about is and I'm really close with all these guys. I mean, I think I would have been close no matter what happened. Let's say we were, you know, a couple of 5-5 teams, or I don't know, we were playing 11 games there, a couple of 5-6, 5-7 teams. I'm as close to those guys. I'm closer to those guys from those ball clubs than anybody now or before. The experiences we went through and the super experiences like that 89 Iron Bowl, I'm sure drew us all closer.
Well, thankfully at that time, there was 2 weeks to prepare. You had the off week before the game.
Oh, that helped tremendously. I don't think I wouldn't have been able to play the week before.
All right, Rob, let's talk about your NFL time. When you look back on an NFL career now, when you think about your time in the NFL, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I had traveled some, you know, because my family had some family that had lived on Long Island. And so when I got drafted by Philadelphia, it was a little bit of a shock, but it's not like I'd ever been out of the state of Alabama. Going to Philly, we had so many Auburn guys. When I showed up, John Hudson, my roommate from Auburn, was already there, got drafted the year before. James Joseph got drafted my year. Ben Tamborello was there when I got there, another Birmingham guy. We thought that was really Auburn Northeast. You know, we had so many Auburn guys, and then we'd pick up a couple more. We ended up picking up an Eric Floyd and Corey Barlow, and we always had so many Auburn guys. It was I guess they kind of, the older guys, they sort of paved the way for me and made it really comfortable where we knew where to live. We know what to do. The games were unbelievable, playing in the Meadowlands, being in the NFC East, playing against the Cowboys, playing against the Giants, playing against the Redskins. I guess you can't call them Redskins anymore, but it was a great league. And it was really an SEC type league. It was the most, at that time, it was the most physical division in the NFL. So that there were a lot of, you know, SEC kids in there just because of the, I guess we had Steve Wallace on the West Coast, but a lot of us were in the NFC East. It was fun. Great stadiums, great fans. Everybody needs to be on the field when you play the Giants, because the things they say to you are unbelievable.
Well, they would say the same thing about the Eagle fans, though, too, right?
The Eagle fans, they would actually, they arrested so many people during the games. At the Eagles game in the Veterans Stadium, they set up court under the stands to process, because it creates such a backlog. They had a judge and a bailiff, and they'd process people at the stadium. We'd be in the huddle. You know, you think it's all business. Randall Cunningham would say, section 714, and we'd look up, and there'd be four or five folks tumbling down the stairs, just wailing each other. It was amazing.
When did Rob Selby know football's about to come to a close for me?
It was that off season, and at that point, you don't really heal up anymore. Season ends, you come home, you take a month off, and you start training again. You know, all of a sudden your elbows aren't healing up anymore, and you're sore all year long. I actually ended up in a camp with Kansas City, so they were overseas, and they called me and said, hey, we want to bring you in for a workout. They were up in Wisconsin, was their camp. And I said, I think I'm done. I don't want to come. And I certainly don't want to come up there and get somebody through camp. And they said, no, you know, we need you. You know, you'd fit well on our scheme. We want you to come up. So I went up there and I talked to them. They flew me in. I talked to them. I said, and I looked at their roster a little bit. And I said, they're just trying to get me to get them through the next 3 or 4 weeks still. I think Dave Zott was hurt until he can get back. And they got another guy hurt. Well, then they sick Lionel James on me. Lionel James was on staff. I don't know if this is going to work. So they wouldn't let me leave. They wouldn't buy me a plane ticket. And you're in the middle of Wisconsin, right by the camp. And I still don't know what it is, but you'd pass a store on the way in from the airport that said taxidermy and cheese. It's a big warehouse, and it said taxidermy and cheese. And to this day, I can't imagine what they were selling or how they were selling it. But they sent Lionel in, and Lionel talked to me. You know, Lionel's a great guy, and he finally talked me into it. So I stayed in camp, and they ended up cutting me with the last cuts. But then I wasn't sure if I needed to keep going or not.
You mentioned it earlier, the camaraderie with those guys you played at Auburn. What does that mean to have those guys that are still part of your life that you guys fought, scraped everything together when you were here at Auburn?
We're all busy. We're all raising families. We're all living, you know, John Hudson's back in Paris, Tennessee. Stacy Searles, he's at that school in Athens. You know, all these guys are scattered everywhere. Jeff Burgers and up in Cherokee up there. But you don't always see these guys, and everybody's busy, and you don't always, you know. But I can pick up the phone right now and talk to any one of them and say, I need something. How's it going? And it's like, you know, I may have not talked to them for 18 months, and it's like we talked yesterday. So it's just that familiarity and that confidence, and that they got your back and you got their back no matter what, still to this day.
Give us an update on you and the family, Rob. What are you doing, bud?
I'm living in Auburn. I'm managing commercial property and got a small construction company. And me and my wife are here. I got a son that's at Sanford that, God willing, we'll graduate in December. And I got a daughter in Fort Worth that just finished a PA program, and she's taking her first job out there. So we're empty nesters. It's us and the dog, and we're scared. He's 14 year old lab. He's an eco dog from Auburn University. I guess we're not truly empty nesters. If he goes, then we will be.
Final question for you, Rob. Yep. What has and what does Auburn mean to you?
Auburn's been through its ups and downs, and they're a passionate fan base. I think they'll, you know, they want to win, but they want to do the right things. But it's an educated fan base. No matter whether it's football, baseball, basketball, swimming, I think everybody knows what it takes to win. We have ups and downs. Even in the lowest lows, Auburn people love Auburn. All right. They don't go away, and they don't get mad, and they're patient. And I think I saw a study not too long ago. How many Auburn I love Auburn people. I don't care if they went to school or not, but the study came out that said how many Alabama fans graduated from Alabama, and it wasn't many, but how many Auburn fans graduated from Auburn or had, you know, some kind of ties to Auburn. And it was a great percentage. And I don't know if that's got to do, you know, if that's got to do with the love of Auburn and, you know, everybody's, I guess they overuse the word family a little bit, but I mean, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. Rob, thanks for taking time to be with us. Great to get to talk to you about those years on the Plains.
Great time.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. War Eagle.
Hey, War Eagle. Thank you.
For Rob Selvey and the Talking Tigers podcast, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.